It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Welcome to this episode of Kennedy Saves the World. And today we're going to be saved by a literary hulking giant who happens to be a multimedia star, my friend Tyrus. He has his most recent book.
A third person here. No.
This is Tyrus's new book. Enough said. There it is. Yep. Hello, get yours now. Great, beautiful forewords by Dana Perino and Billy Corgan.
I had the double foreword.
Nicely done. My book. That's a big deal.
It is. I've been really lucky with blurbs and forwards because I have on my first book, The Ultimate Blurbs, I had Snoop Dogg and Dana Perino. You don't get too much diverse and cool as that. And then this time I had the double forwards. So I get really lucky in those aspects. But it was funny because I went to Dana and asked her if she would like to write the foreword because she was such a big influence on me writing books. She was always kind of like, you need to write.
Yeah.
And she was like, sure. And then Billy Corgan, I thought he was going to do a blurb, but he wanted to write a foreword.
Of course, so it's Billy Corgan.
Yeah, it's Billy Corgan. So, it's one of those things where even though book law or whatever the deal is, you can only have one. But then after,
I didn't know that.
But after seeing Kilmeade, because Kilmeade asked me to write the blurb for his book, Booker T. Washington and Theodore Roosevelt. And he had 14 blurbs on the back. So I no longer am concerned with the rules of.
Of blurbing
and forwards, but I double dipped and I'll take it. So it was very cool.
No, they were beautifully written. And, Dana had a wonderful way of describing your friendship and your way of communicating with each other. Obviously, great stories throughout the book. And I thought it was really sweet how, obviously, when you write your first book and it's as personal as your first tale, Just Tyrus was.
Naked and walking on the beach.
It's nerve-wracking. I mean, it really is like giving birth because you don't know how people are going to respond to. It's really only worthwhile if you truly put yourself in the book. And I liked reading about that and the reaction that people had in this book.
Well, the first book, because I write everything in pieces. I don't really chapter A or 1 to 13. I will sometimes start at 6. I'll just start because the way my brain works, if you show me you got to have at least 275 pages, I'll still be at page 1 going, oh, you got to have 300 pages. But if I just write stuff and then at the end just kind of put it all together, it seems to work.
Then it starts to appear and take shape. Everyone is allowed their own process.
Right, yeah.
There's no reason to start from the beginning, especially if it gives you writer's block.
Four score and they just go. But I can't. But after you put it all together, then I have to read it.
Yes.
Because I'm to figure out where I'm at direction-wise and whatever corrections you have to make. And I sent it off and I got around to reading it. And then I called the publisher and I said, yeah, I changed my mind. It's too personal. Because I got weird. Because I'm a very closed off person. I didn't talk a lot about my life. I make jokes and stuff instead. So it was very I didn't even call them and said, deal's off. And at the time, I think my advance was I only had got half of it. So I was like, listen, I'll pay the other part back in installments. It's too personal. I don't want people coming up to me to ask me questions. I didn't think this through. I just wanted to do a book I talked about my life, but I didn't want to get deep into it. And they were like, well, it's too late. It's already out there. So I don't know about giving birth, but definitely feels like that first time you're naked in front of a doctor. But the doctor that day had students come with them.
I had that recently at the OB.
Yeah. You know, it's
intense. It was a male student.
You can deal with the doc.
Yeah.
But when there's 5 people with clipboards behind them going, you just... there's no sitting resting face that's okay.
I made the male resident rape my vagina.
Oh.
It made him very uncomfortable.
Yeah, that would have made, I just hearing that made me uncomfortable, but I.
Hey, you know what? This is the life we chose to live.
Hey, if you're going to be in the room.
You're in the room, you're going to rate. Speaking of sex robots, I loved your take on AI because there are a lot of pearl clutching naysayers about AI right now. Who are so worried that AI is going to figure out the nuclear codes and AI is going to be the thing that brings us down. I don't believe that.
No, I don't either.
I've seen some of these AI programs and they're really funny. Like if you just want to, it was like when we first discovered Siri and we would ask her questions like, Siri, do you think I'm pretty? So AI, it's really fun to screw around with. But, you know, you bring up a good point. We have so many emotions and so many feelings that are ruling us right now to our detriment.
Mm-hmm.
And then AI is just going to bottom line it.
I would take an AI judge in a minute.
Yeah, the thing, I never thought innocent. About the AI judge.
If you're innocent, you want AI judge.
Amen.
If you're guilty, take your chances with the feelings judge. Mm-hmm. Because what we've seen today now, if you have to be in line with the judge's voting and religion and way of thinking to get a fair trial. So that scares the hell out of me. Mm-hmm. So we've become very, like, feelings have become, in a lot of cases, stronger than facts. That's where AI is good. But AI always goes back to the same thing. It's only going to be as good as the person who designs it.
How good are the sex robots going to be? Because I have been pro-sex robot for some time.
By the time they come out, I'm at a point in my life where I don't care anymore. You know, like, if it would have came out, like, during the awkward, the desert dry spells of your early 20s and late teens, probably would have held off on saving up for a car, but you know,
but what about, you know, loneliness is an epidemic in this country.
A
lot of seniors don't have companionship, but if we have sex robots, like
it'll only make it worse. Like, I think it's going to make it worse. And here's why I tell
I'm
you.
I'm just looking out for the seniors, Tyrus.
No, but here's the thing.
I guess I'm the only lover of humanity in this booth.
Well, so you got your sex robot, and there's that great movie, Her. Mm-hmm. You remember that? Have you seen Her?
No, I saw Lars and the Real Doll.
Oh, no. You got to see Her, because that's exactly what this is. Except it was the earpiece. And what's it? Phoenix. He played the Joker.
Joaquin
Phoenix. He's like a guy who couldn't get over his divorce. So he downloaded basically a Siri, but it's a little, it goes in your earpiece, but nobody talks to anybody. Like in the movie, everyone's just kind of walking. They even, like, the clothes have changed. Everybody wears like sweat outfits that look like pants, but he ends up falling in love with his AI.
Yeah.
And eventually she breaks up with him because
sad.
She outgrows him. But
that's tragic.
When he was like, well, am I the only one? And the best line of the thing, she's like, I'm a program. I have 1,647 boyfriends like you. So I think the and he was just like,
devastated.
You lied to me. She's like, no, that's my program. I'm
Good
not
job.
Capable of lying.
Yeah.
But the premise is like, it's still never going to make up for human contact.
No, absolutely
it's just
not.
And the problem is,
but that's also why we don't have.
But
we've
become
it.
So arrogant, and we're so narcissistic. Like, that was the biggest outbreak besides the coronavirus, was the narcissism virus. Because we've all become, anyone who has social media, one, thinks they're a star. You know, like, they post what they're eating that day. As if millions of people are saying, like, oh, what did Tyrus eat this morning? Was it 1 a.m. or 6? Like, what is it?
But
over
I thought
easy?
That, but you made such a good point talking about millennials, because it's really easy to poop on millennials, especially, like, I'm a Gen Xer. So
yeah,
it's
Gen X and
I love generational warfare, because we are sandwiched in between two of the most narcissistic generation.
Yeah.
Between baby boomers and millennials. It's like, come on, man. But you had a great point, which is, you know, in the olden days, you know, your uncle, your grandfather probably worked for a company for 30 years. And as you write in the book, retired with a gold watch and a pension.
Yeah.
And now people are very much hustling constantly, side gigs, working on building their brand more than anything and living
right.
an interesting life.
And it only works if your brand translates to something, because everyone has a brand.
Yes.
And it doesn't, most of it. And the... That's the problem. It's like people, they get so caught up in the extreme, because that's what social media is. We see the extreme behaviors. That's what everyone looks at. It's like, oh, and then we normalize it and think that's how it is. I think everyone who has a page or a platform or a live thing, they think they have millions of followers and they're making all this money.
Yeah.
And they're not. And that's what a lot of people don't realize. Most influencers, they get deals with companies to put their stuff on platforms. They don't just get, like, Disney doesn't cut them a check for talking about Mickey Mouse for 2 hours without Disney knowing ahead. It's like, we get so caught up in the the quick fix of it or the celebrity fix of it. They don't realize that old school guys, the reason why they did that is so they could relax at the end of their life. See, kids want to relax now.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden just have it there for them when they're older. And it doesn't work that way. But because mommy and daddy won't cut the strings, we see a lot of that where like, I got friends who are like talking about their kids aren't going to get out of their house until they're like 30. And I'm like, especially for men, I can't speak on women, but I know if I didn't go through the period of not having and having to like decide, do I pay the light bill or to go out with the boys this week? Like if I didn't have those type of situations.
I feel bad for people who grow up rich who never have to face that because it really does forge you. Like definitely makes you smarter, more logical and stronger because you don't want to face those decisions again. You do whatever you can to work as hard as you can to not face those decisions.
But you have to go through that stuff to appreciate what you have.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I see it now with my kids, even Christmas this year, like I was, you know, shopping and getting everyone to make sure they had the presents they asked for. But I specifically leave a couple things off the list because I don't think you should get everything you've asked for in life. And to see how long they stay focused on what they didn't have. And this year I was proud that I didn't hear too much about what they didn't get. But years past, I was like, well, I asked for these 8 things. I only got 6. I'm like, when I was a kid, it was like socks, underwear. One big gift.
Oh, yeah.
A couple small gifts. That's it.
No, like, we had a few years where...
You were cut off at the bar. There was...
Yeah, my big present was like a set of sheets and a matching comforter.
I remember the socks.
Like, yeah, I will never forget those like lean years because it really helped you appreciate...
But the one nice gift you had, you cherished it. Like I see piles of presents that I bought just stacked up somewhere. And I was like, why did I think?
Yeah,
but that's on us though, because extras, we do too much.
Yes, absolutely.
Like we're responsible. Even though my group, I started kids late. So mine are all young, like 9 and I didn't know, and 11 and 12. Well, 12, 12, now all 12. The last 12 crossed the finish line. December 17th.
People are like, Tyrus, do you have triplets?
Yeah,
like,
no, kind of. I outsource. And in the book, I don't talk about it. I make reference to them, but I don't talk about it. A lot of people ask me why I don't write more about my kids and stuff. Because I'm like, because of the unconventional way they all came together, they're going to have a lot of questions and growing pains. Because anytime you have all your brothers and sisters are born in the same year, there's going to be good days and there's going to be bad days and there's going to be question days.
Yes.
And as my kids get older, the last thing I want them to do is have to refer to a book that I discussed it with the world and didn't discuss it with them. So that's why I'm always like that. People always ask, like, I'd love to hear that story other than in joke form and stand up.
And sometimes it's not your story to tell, especially when there are kids involved. I push in this
book. I never tell anybody's business. Like I cannot stand tell alls, especially as a bodyguard, working with Snoop and a lot of the people that I was doing executive protection. I'm there and I see parts of their life that I would never have seen had I not been their bodyguard.
Yeah.
So for me to speak on it, I think is the worst thing a bodyguard could do would be to talk about a personal life because you're there to protect.
Yeah.
You're not there because you were invited. I feel like, and I'll just do it in the book, and I especially did it in my first book, I do this book. I will tell them a certain story to a point and be like, this is where my version ends.
Yeah.
You need to check the mother because especially like football locker rooms, wrestling locker rooms, you didn't earn the right to be there. You don't get that stuff.
Yeah.
So sometimes, and I think longevity wise, it's better because we all see the fallacious, you know, you tell like the royal book where he, you know, talking about his dad wearing underwear and, you know, just making fun of and trashing his royal family. And it got him some good book sales the first month.
Yeah.
Now he's stuck with his albatross around his neck that he can't get rid of. And
they're not going to forget. They're like, guess what?
They're thinking about cutting
really
him off completely.
Really good at was it holding worth grudges.
It? Yeah. And rightfully so. I just feel like you shouldn't talk about yourself because you can always, no matter what, with very few exceptions, you can always look at yourself in situations and you could always have done a little better. And that's how I try to like write my style of books is I always try to put it on me because when you put it on other people, you really can't fix it.
Unless they're dead and then you can make stuff up, which I found out.
Yeah. I didn't know that. What? Tell me.
Yeah. Kurt Cobain had 2 children together.
You did?
No, not really, but I think I could.
You know what? Well, you know what? There's a story that, you know, that we're talking about with Gutfeld. There's a man who had 180 kids.
Ooh.
But, you know.
Talking about a rough Christmas.
But I don't.
I mean, you get carpal tunnel.
I hate
still
that
not
story.
Christmas cards.
Did he really do the work, though?
No, it's a very short parental investment.
Yeah, he donated at an office.
Yeah.
It's not like he had 180 conquests.
No.
That were all knocked up. That's impressive.
I mean, that would
probably
be impressive.
And probably
like
legal.
If you are that virile that you can just look at a woman.
And get 180 women pregnant and then say, I don't know, why am I single? You can't afford, you should have, that's impossible.
I mean, if you bring that up with anyone on a second or third date,
you would have to refer to your children like in a hive sense. This is my colony.
Yes. These are the wasps.
I couldn't even imagine. There's no way you're remembering all those names.
No. 180?
No, you name them all numbers.
Yeah.
I don't know
if I could name 180 people on my phone. Don't go anywhere. More Kennedy Saves the World right after this.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
So when you were listening to Richard Pryor as a kid, and you still do before your shows,
Everyone.
Which I absolutely love. So now I will picture you with your Beats on listening to Richard Pryor, which makes me so happy because I don't think he gets enough love. But this is funny because you're talking about Richard Pryor, and I read Nikki Sixx's book, and he had a very similar childhood to yours.
Okay.
And, you know, he's very personal, and it's heartbreaking. Like, it's hard to read when you look up to someone and they're one of your heroes. And
right.
then you find out that they went through so much pain, like it kind of breaks your heart because you're emotionally invested
in
their
life.
I was
like that with Lou Ferrigno when I talked to Lou Ferrigno about his childhood.
So Nikki Sixx's mom dated a comic when they lived in Reno, and it was the only male figure in his life who was decent to him,
right.
kind, and you know, went out of his way to spend time with him. It was Richard Pryor. And in my head I conflated and I thought your mom dated Richard Pryor. Did your mom date Richard Pryor?
No, she dated George Clements.
Oh.
After that.
Yeah, okay.
She was kind of done with the brothers.
Wait.
See, after she met the version of where I came from, she was good.
Yeah.
She had enough. Unfortunately, he, as him as a representative, wasn't a very good. He was abominable. I hate using the word man, but he was terrible to her, to where it kind of changed. Somebody so vicious that it changes the way you look at the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of, especially mental health in the late 70s, early 80s, that wasn't a thing. You didn't.
No.
That was something that rich people did.
There was a lot of stigma around that, too. Like,
so
if you told people you're going to, they wouldn't even use the word therapist. They use the word counselor.
Yeah. Because if
like you're going to see a school counselor trying to figure out where to go to college.
Exactly.
They try to soft pedal that.
Who's got two black kids, and she's trying to, she had me when she was just, I think she was almost turned 16, or she was 15 or 16 at the time. And you didn't, domestic violence, you didn't go anywhere. You just took it. Like, it was just, and it was not just her. I can remember like sitting there, because used to, back in the day, everyone smoked cigarettes and sat at the table and drank wine or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the wives would get together and they would just, and the husbands, they assumed were working, but most of the time were around the streets. And they would just sit at the table, and it was just, they, when they were there, they could talk about it because they had to be in the circle, and you could see one either had a black eye or bruised wrist or whatever. Or they were talking about this, that, or whatever. And that was the only time that they could even get things out, but it was always like hush. And if a child walked into the room, they just stopped talking because, and I talked about it enough said where, my father came home, which was funny. He was weird because he would come home convinced that she was cheating, but he was out cheating the whole time.
Oh,
like
course.
That, you know what I'm saying? Like that always blew my mind.
Yeah.
Like he'd come home and he'd go at her. And then, one of the book, the Sea Turtles book, where he was forcing me to call her names to get her to confess that she had been cheating. And my mother was, she didn't want the savings passed on to me. And I talk about our eye contact where she was like, just mommy knows you don't mean it. Do what you need. Cause she was more concerned with protecting me from him. So, but like you never, there was just no places for women her age and her situation to go to really get help other than just one day hulking up and saying, ah, the hell with it, which she did. She packed us up and she got us out of there. But it took the abuse starting to spread me and my brother's way before she, because her, she had just accepted her fate. And that was just the mindset back then to where, like, I'm just in a bad situation. Focus on the good times. Hopefully he won't kill me. But we do know statistically that's usually, yeah, that's, it usually,
I mean, you read,
up,
especially around Christmas, like you read these horrific stories. When were you big enough to take him on?
Oh, I tried when I was 4. I wrote about it in my first book. I tried to stab him in the butt too. Unfortunately, I have always find a little humor in everything. See, I saw a movie where I got stabbed and you stab him. Mm-hmm. And they just die. That's all. It didn't matter where. I think it was like in the back or something. And he walks out slowly and drops to his knees, mm-hmm. and that's it. So I was like, huh.
See the little cardboard under his coat.
Yeah. Well, again, I thought all I had to do was
puncture.
He was doing his stuff with my mom and the man got a knife and stabbed him. And I was height wise. It was like right in his butt, like right in that. And did not end well with me. But that's what sparked her going, okay, enough, because at that point, then I was now the betrayer because I wasn't his son. I could do, how come his own flesh and blood do that? Then we'll stop it. My mom. But that's, I think, the thing that triggers. He had hit me so hard that he had cracked my orbital socket. Yeah. And then he wanted to throw me out the window of our apartment because I wasn't his, because I tried to. So, but my mother, it wasn't until then, that's when she was like, enough. And I always wondered how things would have been for her. I mean, she's got on with her life amazingly and all that good stuff. But in terms of our relationship, if it wouldn't have got to the point where it was me, if she could have got out before. Like today now, someone's saying something like, you can pick up a phone and call somebody. Even the police will come out and, you know.
They'll arrest somebody.
They'll arrest, yeah, California. Whoever has the mark is going, man or woman. But it didn't used to be like that, you know. And then if you called them if they did come to the house, and so maybe he does get arrested for the night. Then he gets, well, especially nowadays.
Look at OJ. Got arrested a bunch of times.
But and then comes home. Who do you think he's going to pass those savings on to?
Yeah.
And he's supposedly providing, who's going to get him out. Then all the money, the person who's putting him in then has to go bail him out. And then she's got to, you know, that's going to be a fun car ride home. So.
I mean, just.
I talk a lot about it in terms of like, her strength, but it comes in. That's the sea turtles chapter.
When were you able to forgive your mom?
Probably when I had kids.
Yeah.
It like takes it for a long time. I was always bitter, but more so because I always felt like I was never enough. Like you don't, as a kid, you don't understand adult things. You don't understand why there had to be boyfriends. You didn't understand those things. And as a young man who idolizes his mother, and you see these, a lot of times they were losers. I mean, but again, now that I'm a grown-ass man and I have kids, I understand some of the choices. But it wasn't, you got to grow up before you understand what mom and dad does. So I always look at when kids are like, oh, my parents are the worst and they did this to me. I'm like, wait till you walk in their shoes and you might see things a little bit differently. And so just dealing with trying to be a good dad and dealing with the situations that come and go, all of a sudden, some of my mother's choices as an adult made sense. They weren't feel good choices. You know, somebody gives you up for a little while so they can go get their degree, so they become a nurse. Yeah. As a kid, you just focus on them giving you up. You don't think why. And the easiest thing is to think, well, they didn't care about you. But then to go into nursing school and to graduate. And get to have a job and have something where you can provide for your kids was a great idea. It was the best move that she made. Mm. So if I look back at it now and I focus on the positives, I had the great relationship. I got lucky. The people who were taking care of me were good people. I learned a lot from my foster dad, a lot about what it is to be a man. Like our time was short. They were together like 3 years, but his lessons carried on with me forever. But for a long time, I just felt like
abandoned.
That's
an era in a child's life.
Yeah, that's an era.
That is a very substantial amount of time.
But we're seeing now that the errors, we're not allowing kids to grow through it. Mm. We're not allowing that anymore. We're trying to solve these problems.
The bulldozer parent.
Well, but we've become bulldozer society because You see the school, the teachers.
I mean, even the chapter about USC, yeah, and the Booker.
What?
Oh, no, sorry. Frederick Douglass chapter, you're talking about, you know, taking words away as though the words are going to hurt people and the words are the problem. But you point out the people for whom the words are the problem, they're the problem.
Yeah, if they change the name, and if you change you lynching can't use to the party.
Field.
Yeah.
Like, I do field work. You know, I'm going out in the field to do some research. My field of vision.
That's by people who don't read books all the way through. That's by people who come up with these flash ideas. It's not the words, it's the deeds that matter. A field is, unless you literally spent your life in a field, which nobody in any recent memory in the last century has had to do in this country. So when they try to take words like that away, that's unaffected virtue signaling. Mm-hmm. It's a waste. It means absolutely nothing. Nobody is saying field. Oh, my great-great-grandfather was in a field. No one is saying that. They hear the word slavery. Yeah, my great-great-grandfather was a slaver. I'm glad that shit's over. Like, but for someone like me to be like, oh, slavery's just got me all twisted. I'm full of it. I'm just making that up. I'm just using that as an excuse for not doing what I need to do. Or, well, let's be honest, the hustle. Because in this day and age, America has so much money that we throw at these fake causes and these shakedowns, and whether it's a Black Lives Matter or if it was a religious church.
Hustle.
It's just straight, yeah, it's a hustle. So there's a lot of money in being a victim and playing the thing, and there's people who have nothing better to do with their money but to throw it towards, like, oh, this, I'm contributing to Black Lives Matters as a rich white man because I want to, you know, whew, my conscience is clear.
Yeah.
It is like, but from what? What did you do? Well, I'm just trying to help.
Yeah, it's like John Kerry buying carbon credits, making himself feel better about flying private everywhere.
Yeah, no, that's not.
That's not how it works. Again.
Listen, I talk about the environment too. Like I said, this book is like each chapter is not connected. That's one.
No, it's great. It's comprehensive,
yeah,
but
it
allows you to use your experience.
But the hustles that we see, especially you and I see, that's one thing about working in a place like Fox News is we see the hustles all the time now,
yeah.
And we see they have whether they're grassroots or whatever. And people will throw money at stuff instead of investigating or getting involved or showing up to the marches or the protests. Because if they did, then a lot of times they'd be like, oh, this is the one I saw. Oh,
yeah.
You know what?
Yeah. And these people
I'm good.
Full of hot garbage.
Yeah, because they're.
You're absolutely right. There's so many rich people who throw money and it's really for virtue signaling. But they don't want to investigate the truth. They don't want to make the hard calls. They're not going to go and talk to the people who are supposedly, you know, at ground zero.
Find
on
out
the front
for
line.
Yourself.
Yes.
That's the biggest message in my book. You have to investigate everything. People just, we read, what happened was the worst thing happened was the original Twitter before it became X. That little amount of words, how many words you were allowed to put?
140 characters.
140
yeah.
characters. That's about as far as we go. We just see a headline.
Yes.
Kennedy saves the world. Is going across, which is very cool. I don't have any of these on my podcast. It's very nice. But Kennedy saves the world. So then I would say, well, you know, Kennedy saved the world last week.
Yeah, I did.
And she, you know, well, what world did she? She saved the world.
The world. World.
Did she help everyone? Oh, I don't know. So
the world's big choice.
Apparently she's racist why she saved. But no one bothers to be like, realize that like, oh, it's a catchphrase for a podcast. No, she saved the world.
Yeah.
Like, that's all they need. That's enough. And if it's a misspell or Kennedy slays the world, and then, you know, did you hear that Kennedy put hands on the world this week? What?
Yeah.
And they just run with it. No one investigates. No one looks things up. They say things just like, oh, I belong to Black Lives Matter. Oh, why? Because Black Lives Matter. Oh, okay. But why? Black Lives. You're racist. Like, that's the phrase. And Black Lives, like, everyone wants to go after them for the buying mansions. They're just following the playbook. Like, anytime you go to church and the reverend's got diamonds on,
yeah,
I'm calling a suspect. Like, I'm just like, Jesus was a carpenter, okay? He could have had a lot of jobs. He knew a guy, you know? Like, he could have used nepotism in any way he wanted to, but he didn't. So I always find it funny that Black Lives Matter needs to be put on a microscope because they basically used the group for individual achievement, saying this is for Black, but they didn't build any schools, didn't buy any computers, they didn't do any of that. They took care of themselves, and they took care of Black Lives Matter to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what we all do. We take care of what matters to us. You don't, when you feed your kids at night, you're like, hold on, let me go give me some of your stuff to go outside and see if we can feed another kid. you're not going to do that. You're going to take care of yours first. And it's the same thing. And so when I hate grouping, it's the my biggest pet peeve is whenever I'm thrown in a group, whenever I'm like, hey, black voters, what? Like, that's the stupidest shit I've ever heard in my life. Oh, well, women voters who wear glasses, they lean towards this. What are you? You have no idea. Like, you're connecting people based on pigment, not life experiences, not tax brackets.
Or who they're looking out for and who they're going to take care of first, because you have a lot more in common as a parent with someone else who also has kids, who has the same frustrations and concerns that you do.
But they will do the, oh, it's black parents or white parents. It has to do with how many zeros you're putting in your account each week opposed to how much you're paying out. Mm-hmm. That decides as a parent how you feel politically about things.
Amen.
So it has nothing to do with skin. Well, you're going to lose the black vote. There is no black vote. There's no white vote. The individuals vote. And for a long time, the one thing that in the book I talk about with, I don't talk about Trump much at all because I feel like everyone else talks about it. But he did make it to where people who are not interested in politics at all are now.
Yeah.
It's like sport game now. Now we're starting to see more people like, oh, well, whether you agree with him or not, or you want to vote for him or don't vote for him, that's not the point. The point is he changed the game to where people who were invested because of the reality TV show event between him and mainstream media brought people to start looking at more than just the lines, more than just the headlines. So I'm excited about that. I think that's going to change. I think they're still pushing the group thing, but I'm hoping we're starting to get more advanced as the people to where we start voting.
Well, if you want to read about the struggle and success of an incredible individual and how that translates and to every voting individual. Enough said, is Tyrus's latest book. Thank you so much for stopping by. It's always good to talk to you.
Yeah.
I mean, your story. Yeah. Your story is, it's compelling and it's really funny. Like, I love the chapter about Mr. Rivera. I didn't know Geraldo was your drama teacher.
You know what? Geraldo would have been a good drama teacher.
I believe it.
You remember his old TV shows?
Hells yeah.
Yeah. But no, unfortunately, Mr. Rivera was a giant. I think he was Swedish or something. He had to be like one of the, he was Norwegian of some sort. He was tall, but he had like the Hulk Hogan hair where like it was long, but bald on top, but
horseshoe,
he wasn't letting it go. But it was the long horse.
Yeah, the drape.
Like if he had a hat on, he would have the party fell in the back. And you're like, oh, this dude has long hair. They takes it off.
And you're
and
like,
shiny. But he was, he used to do this thing real quick. When you would be on stage, and it used to just blow my mind and I could not get around with it. When you would go to perform, he'd sit at the front of the class to watch you. Mm-hmm. But he would always do this face where he would put both his hands and be like, he'd do like this, and you'd be like, I remember one time I was like, are you going to be like that the whole time? Because I can't do this monologue. I can't do this. I can't do a Hamlet monologue. And I'm like, I came to be or not to be what you stare at me like that. Because like, and he was like, oh, I'm sorry, please continue. And he was just watching, you know, and then like, you either get a brilliant or,
I have some notes.
We're almost there.
Yeah.
But we're not there. I'm just like.
They're one teacher who believes in you.
He cares.
Changes your life.
But like he.
And God bless those teachers. We need more of them. We need them to overthrow the teachers' unions.
Do we even have drama teachers anymore?
Kids are
lucky. I was failing Spanish class so bad that she was like, I will help you get out.
Oh.
I will help you get in. She's like, there's a drama class at this time period. Maybe you should go into that.
And you, like, and Mr. Rivera were meant for each other, like Socrates and Plato. Tyrus, thank you. Always good to talk to you.
Always a pleasure.
I'll see you later, Skeeter.
Yes, you will.
Yes, I will. This has been Kennedy Saves the World, along with Tyrus and Kennedy.
Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Oh, go ahead and leave me a review while you're there. I'd love to hear what you have to say. You've been listening to Kennedy Saves the World on the Fox News Podcast Network.